Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting to order on the July 5th, 2023, the regular meeting of the Blue Van County Board of Supervisors. Let's stand and have a pledge and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Now we have the adoption of the agenda.
Madam Chair, I've got one thing I would like to add. It's normally this would go under consent agenda, but it's kind of pressing regarding ambulance purchase. So the title is Ambulance Purchase Agreement Number 2 with Atlantic Emergency Services.
And where is it?
We would add it after D, as an action item after
action.
D.
Okay, yep. And say it again, it's the ambulance.
Yeah, Ambulance Purchase Agreement Number 2 with Atlantic Emergency Solutions.
Purchase agreement. All right. Okay, now that we've added that to the action matters, can someone approve the agenda, please?
I move that we approve the agenda.
Second.
All right. And a motion by Mrs. Speaker and second by Mr. Fairchild. The agenda is approved. And the chair votes aye. County Administrator's report.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the board, it's got a few things to report. So I want to, we've got a new employee starting, Justin May, starting with the Sheriff's Office as a deputy sheriff in training. He started on June 28th. Certainly would like to welcome to Fluvanna County staff and the Sheriff's Office. And just a few things that's been happening here at the library with Ms. Hoffman. So they've been doing lots of fun workshops. So they did the Bohemian Dreamcatcher. They did two workshops of about 20 people. Adults. They also did Tech Day, which was Lego Movie Maker and Robotics. They had two workshops of about 20 people each. They also had some special performances here. They had Peter McCory, who was the one-man band, and they had 128 people show up for that. And then I think they have, like they do every year, Wes Isley, Party Magic. He's a magician. They had 298 people show up for the magician. And just some upcoming events that they have going on here at the library. This Friday at 2 p.m. only, the movie Avatar, The Way of Water, which is a PG-13 movie, and they'll be serving free popcorn. So any kids, adults, whoever wants to come and see a movie and get out of the heat can certainly come here and get some popcorn to boot. And then also a local band, Three to Go, will perform on Saturday, July 15th at 1 p.m. here at the library, performing American standards and show tunes from the 60s. And as a reminder, some upcoming meetings. Remember, we only got this one meeting here for the month of July. So we will not meet again until August 2nd, which is Wednesday, August 2nd at 5 p.m. will be our next regular meeting. That we will be back at the Performing Arts Center on August 2nd. Wednesday, August 16th, our 7 p.m. meeting, again, will be at the Performing Arts Center. And then after that will be Wednesday, September 16th at 5 p.m. And again, we'll continue to be back at the Performing Arts Center. We're only here for the months of June and July. So happy to answer any questions that the board has this evening.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Dahl? If not, then we will now open our first round of public comments. If you would like to speak to the board, please come to the lectern here and give your name and your address, and you have 5 minutes to speak to the board. Anyone interested?
Thank you. An item of clarification for citizens here. The citizen wants to talk about item, lease law, item F. So does that person need to speak now?
They would, if they want to make comments, yes, if they want to make comments about the leash law for the board to take whatever consideration as the board discusses, they would probably want to speak now. So yes.
Great.
So, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Sorry.
Good evening. I'm Tom Diggs. I live at 947 Jefferson Drive. I'm speaking in my personal capacity and not as chair of the Lake Monticello Community Development Committee. When ZTA 2103, the proposal to increase the maximum density in the R4 zoning district from 2.9 to 5.5 units per acre, comes before you in August, you should vote to deny it. You may recall that you voted to defer this for a year at your August 18, 2021 meeting. At your July 6, 2022 meeting, you'd have voted to defer it to June 21, 2023. Both of your votes were predicated in large part on needing to revise the comprehensive plan first. The comprehensive plan still has not been revised. That, at a minimum, should warrant a vote to defer again, but I hope you will vote to deny. However, please consider that there is no reason to pursue ZTA 2103 now. The staff report for your July 6, 2022 meeting presented a 9-point rationale for the proposal. 8 of these points directly or indirectly invoked affordable housing. However, just increasing density in R4 will do nothing to increase affordable housing. It will, however, permit developers to build more housing without considering affordability and without having to provide any open space or community amenities. The 9th point in that report only addressed allowing Marina Point to build more units. The Marina Point developer noted that those units would be offered for a minimum of $400,000 and would not be affordable housing. Approving ZTA 2103 will increase the likelihood of infill development and introduce uncertainty to existing R4 properties at Lake Monticello. Among your 2022 two-year goals is D9, quote, review the zoning ordinance to look at higher density options between CPA and R4, close quote. When this goal was first introduced at the board's November 17, 2021 meeting, it included the note that the future land use subcommittee would examine the issue. No such subcommittee was ever formed, and there is no public record of any review of this goal. If the goal of increased density in the zoning district is affordable housing, the two most logical options are: one, establish an entirely new zoning district that addresses affordable housing and the infrastructure and amenities such housing needs, and two, define that no changes are needed since the existing R3 and PUD districts permit much higher density than what is proposed by ZTA 2103, with R3 permitting up to 10 units per acre without respect to affordable housing, and PUD providing a bonus density for affordable housing of up to 24 units per acre. Both of these districts also require open space and amenities. As I noted earlier, last year you voted to reconsider ZTA 2103 at your June 26, 2023 meeting. You did not do so. Mr. Miles informed some residents who inquired about the proposal that it was going to be addressed during today's meeting. Last week, Ms. Harris sent an email to a number of residents that the proposal will now be considered at your August 16, 2023 meeting. No reasons have been given for not bringing this proposal back to you on the date you specified in a recorded vote. Given your prior attorney's comments about limiting a deferral to a year, and with your deferrals now exceeding 2 years, it seems extremely unusual for you not to have reconsidered this on the date you specified. This variance from the date you specified suggests to the public that specific dates in your votes are not respected or perhaps not relevant. The public needs to know why your consideration was not heard at the meeting specified in your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board?
My name is Christina Dickerson. I live at 723 North Riverton Drive. I'm here in support of the Dogs Running at Large ordinance. and I just wanted to share my personal opinion and how I feel about the whole situation. I live in a rural area, and of course we have neighbors that have dogs that run freely, and some of these neighbors are careless, and they do not care if their dogs are gone for days on end and come back muddy and tired and disoriented at times. And some of these dogs are hazardous to not only my pets, but my daughter as well. My godchildren can be able to play. I am constantly staring at my camera when I'm gone to see if these dogs are chasing after my animals. I cannot let my dogs outside in my own yard. We have an electric fence and we have a doggy door. They are allowed to be outside at any given time. They don't go anywhere, but I can't let them outside when I'm not there to supervise them because I have dogs from neighbors' homes and otherwise coming over at any given time to start a dog fight, to attack them, to chase after my cats and harm them. Unfortunately, I've had to be in touch with animal control a million times, and unfortunately her hands are tied because there is no law against these dogs running at large until there is something bad happens, and I want to prevent that. I am exhausted. I am tired of feeling like I am on pins and needles at any given time watching my 13-year-old play in the backyard. I have to watch and make sure that no dogs are coming over. One dog in particular that is incredibly unpredictable. An enormous Great Dane that comes over and lunges at us, barks at us, snarls at us, and just, it's terrifying, but she can't do, animal control can't do anything about it because it hasn't harmed anyone or anything yet. And I think that there needs to be something done about that. I think there needs to be some kind of law preventing people from allowing their dogs to roam all over God's creation and not knowing where they are, not knowing if they're safe, not knowing what's going to happen. I have an 8-year-old border collie. He's very sweet, but he is a little bit territorial. And even if these dogs are friendly, if they come onto my property, he's going to growl, and that's going to start a fight. And I have to watch for that constantly because regardless of a friendly dog coming around, he's going to start something, and it's his problem. And I feel that something needs to change. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? If not, I will close the first public comment.
Yes. I need to make a comment. I'm not sure where the lady lives. Susie Morris, 6840 Thomas Jefferson Parkway, Palmyra, Virginia, 22963, Quaint Leaf Farm. I'd like to, in defense of people who live out in the county whose dogs are not leash dogs, they're dogs to protect animals and in some cases to protect crops. That would make it impossible because we have coyotes, we have raccoons, etc., that would eat things like corn if you had a cornfield or a garden. So in defense of dogs, I would like to, and the people who live in these rural areas, I would just like to say that a leash law everywhere you are would be very difficult for some of these people who are growing crops and who have cattle or sheep and they have dogs to protect them. I know a grandson who doesn't live in this county has Great Pyrenees to protect the goats. So we need to keep that in mind since this is a rural area, not to make it so difficult. I would hope that maybe these people would be contacted maybe by the county after a certain number of concerns have arisen about the constant trespass on their property. I would think that there might be some means to try to control things that way rather than putting a leash law in for all dogs that are on farms where crops are grown and goats or sheep or cattle are raised. So that's one thought, please, to keep in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barr. Anyone else? And I need to look online as well, too. No one online. Anybody else in the audience? Anybody?
I should say, I only see one person online that I don't recognize as a county staff person. So they're not unmuting anyway.
Okay.
That is the lady that's applied for head tech.
Oh, okay.
Okay, anyone in the audience? Then I will officially close the first comment section. And now we will go to action matters. We don't have any public hearings this evening. A, resolution recommending appointment to the Board of Equalization. Mr. Dahl.
Where's the... Give me a second here.
And I assume we've all read the resolution. Do we need to read the resolution? Do y'all think we need to read it?
No.
Okay, everybody, you know, read the resolution. Okay, because we have a motion, we'll come up.
Just give me 1 second. I apologize if the wrong thing got linked up.
Yeah, and...
Okay.
Yeah.
So really quick, again, the board makes a recommendation for the Board of Equalization. We had a BOE member that actually moved out of the county, so we need to name an alternate. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not going to go into the code. This code section 58.1-3370 talks about appointment, talks about per the Virginia code what we should do. And then Virginia code 58.1-3374 talks about qualifications of the individuals for appointment. And again, you know, just really talking about appointments, 30% of the members of the board shall be commercial or residential real estate appraisers or other real estate professionals, builders, developers, or legal financial professionals, and at least one member shall, hold on 1 second, can't see, shall sit on all cases involving commercial, industrial, multifamily, residential property unless waived by the taxpayer. So just looking at the one applicant, Mr. Woody Fincham, he's in the Ravana District. He's been a real estate appraiser for over 20 years, bachelor's in business admin, holds 5 designations related to valuation and consulting on real estate, instructor for the Appraisal Institute, reviewer for conservation easement and historical facade easements with tax department for the Commonwealth, and again, has experience with residential, commercial, and agricultural property. So again, we're kind of getting to the end of the BOE cycle, but we still have to appoint someone.
Right.
So, or make a recommendation, and then that would go to the circuit court.
First we need to approve the resolution.
Let me go back. I apologize here. There we go.
All right, the motion is up.
I move that the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution entitled A Resolution Recommending Appointment to the Board of Equalization.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mrs. Eager and second by Mrs. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And then next we need to appoint.
No, that's it. The resolution, yep.
Okay. All right, now we have some motions. Next, we are going to move on to B, and we will make that appointment when we get to the appointment down in E. We have consultant services agreement with D.W. Mary Incorporated.
Yeah, so let me pull up the brief, and then we've got Ms. Joyce Pace here and Scott Newman with the Electoral Board, so they can talk, and if you all want to come up, I'll talk a little bit, just high-level stuff, and they can get a little bit more in the details. Local election security standards called less under applicable law make this consulting service agreement necessary for the Electoral Board to certify its compliance with the standards. So the objective of entering into this agreement is to comply with less standards and then less controls. Controls are standard control matrices, tools, and resources. So the Virginia Board of Elections came down with these standards, and you want to talk a little bit more on the specifics of them?
These are standards to safeguard our elections, primarily the infrastructure in the registrar's office and their connections to the state. These change annually. There were 400-some requirements. They narrowed it down to 150-some, but they are still not things that we have the expertise or the bandwidth to do on our own in a small county like this without a lot of staff. This company is already working with several other counties, so they have the expertise to do it with us, and they will do things like penetration testing to make sure no one can break into our network and things like that to hopefully help us meet the state requirements and beyond.
And county staff, myself, Andy Notman, the IT director, also met with Ms. Pace and the rest of the electoral board members and kind of met with this firm. And, you know, they seem highly qualified to do this type of work. Again, this is some cybersecurity compliance standards that the state has kind of pushed down to the locality. And so this firm does this with other localities as well. So really, from an agreement standpoint, this really wouldn't come forward to the board necessarily, maybe more of a consent, but this was not budgeted for in Ms. Pace's fiscal year 24 budget because it wasn't necessarily, I guess known at the time. So that's really why it's coming forward to the right. Board.
Okay. All right, and that's for the, well, any questions first? Anyone, the board members, you all have any questions?
So I didn't understand the part of what wasn't known during budget season.
I will rely on them.
We didn't know that we would move into this direction. We knew we had to follow the standards, but at the time when we were, I guess, budgeting, we did not take that in consideration.
I think it came about more when our board member, Dan Graffin, could be here this evening, was working on the mandatory response to the state on each of the items, and he realized how many of them we could not meet on our own.
We're just not qualified to follow what they're asking us to do.
Gotcha. And Louisa is one of the counties that is utilizing this firm, and then talking with them.
And then after they realized they didn't have the bandwidth to do this, they met with myself and county IT to kind of really look into this a little bit more. And again, that's when it was really kind of looked at that we just, it's not the expertise that we necessarily have in house to do this type of stuff.
And with the standard, you might have said, I apologize, did the standards change, or are there standards that were in place that we...
The standards change every year, pretty much, I think.
And we didn't meet the standards anyway. We just have to say we couldn't follow those standards. But now we have to. If we don't, we will not have access to the state database. So I wouldn't be able to do much.
Yeah. As of this year, is that right?
It's each year. It just went into effect a couple of years ago. Okay. So they're expecting us to move forward in their requirements each year to get more and more into, you know, being qualified according to the state's level. So if we don't make any effort to do this, they're going to say you can't have access to the database because we're not doing anything to follow their standards.
And we've always had standards, but they've increased the standards.
So. They increased, and now they're kind of pulling back, mm-hmm. not making as many of the requirements, fine-tuning it, mm-hmm. but we're still required to follow these standards, and right. We don't have a lot of it in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
So if we've been out of compliance, then is there anything that's different about this year if we wait until the budget season to put in the budget instead of doing it now?
I don't think we want to do that with a presidential coming up.
Okay.
And we want to have a penetration test done so we know where our weaknesses are. So I think that is the push because we don't want to be so far out of compliance and something does happen. If Fluvanna County is the one that they target, So we're trying to say that we are following what the law wants, and that way we have trouble.
And it's not that we think that Lugana would be, you know, a really desirable target, except that they might figure we're not going to be ready for it, and that we are told.
And you haven't been out of compliance in the past.
I guess you would say the standards have just come in.
Standards change, right. All right.
But we didn't raise up each of those years as the standards changed, right?
I wish I could tell you the exact year that this started, because it hasn't been that long that we've had to follow these standards.
Okay. Any other questions?
And again, so there's two motions. One is to approve the agreement with a not to exceed amount, and then the second one, there should be an or there, determining where the board would want to take the money for to transfer to Ms. Pace's budget for the $20,000.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the consulting. Approve the consulting services agreement with B.W. Murray and Company Incorporated, the Fluvanna County Electoral Board, and the Fluvanna County Registrar, and the county for as-needed services up to a maximum of no more than $20,000 per annual term, and those current tasks for Project Agreement 1 for cybersecurity planning services for $1,070.91 monthly, and that Project Agreement 2 for penetration testing at a one-time cost of $3,240, and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement, Project Agreement 1 and Project Agreement 2, subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor? Motion number 1. Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Now, motion number 2, we have to decide which one of these we're going to do, unassigned fund balance.
You can do unassigned fund balance or BOS contingency. Yeah, I mean, in your contingency, I think your contingency, in the package, I think you have 146,000. $146,000 and some change that has approved. Obviously, we're at the start of the new fiscal year, so nothing has touched that.
Right.
Or you can pull it from unassigned fund balance.
Okay. So is it an agreement that we would pull it out of the contingency, or does anyone think it should be out of unassigned fund balance?
Well, I'd say BOS contingency.
Anyone else?
Ms. Eager, what do you think?
Would anybody else have some thoughts before we make the motion? Okay, then will someone make the motion, please?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve an FY24 supplemental appropriation for the Registrar's Office in the amount of $20,000 from the FY24 Board of Supervisors contingency to cover cybersecurity consulting services cost to comply with 2023 locality election security standards, less from the Virginia State Board of Elections and the Virginia Department of Elections.
Okay, second, please.
Second.
All right, we have a motion for Mr. Sheridan and second for Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Next, we will go to C, Sheriff's Office Recruitment, Retention, and Salary Increase.
Yeah, so I'll go through a quick presentation, and then certainly Sheriff Hess is here to answer any additional questions. Again, so we brought this at the last board meeting, and the board wanted us to bring back some information on costs and what some things would look like. So again, the sheriff discussed recruitment retention and a proposal to increase minimum salaries for deputies, along with some other changes at the last meeting. So Sheriff has proposed changing starting deputy pays for certified and non-certified approximately $3,000, and then to change the sign-on bonuses. Currently, certified is $5,000, and he proposed changing it to $7,500. Currently non-certified is there is no sign-on bonus, and he proposed changing it to $4,000, and then discuss increasing shift differential from $1,100 a year to $2,200 a year for patrol deputies, and then didn't really talk about the 80-hour. I think he's more looking at for some of the other items, but he had talked about change the 80-hour pay period to be more competitive across the board. That one That would take a little more analysis to really figure out what that one would be. So after the board requested some data, after getting some data from Sheriff Hess, looking at the average between calendar year 2022 and 2023, the average is about 5 resignations, retirements per year. So that's what a lot of this data is based on, about 5 people changing their positions a year. And I think that's kind of what we discussed previously right around that. So one, if we change the salary amounts, the starting salaries, and I just put in what the total is for the 3,000 times 5, that's 15,000 plus other ancillary costs associated with that, benefits costs. So the total to do that item, again, these are estimates, because if it's, whether it's 5 people, whether it's 8 people, whether it's 3 people, all I can go by are what the averages are. And so based upon that average, that would be about $18,000, a little over $18,000 a year in additional costs on that particular item. For making changes to the sign-on bonus, again, increasing the certified from 5 to 75 and non-certified from 0 to 4. So this is basically showing, I think there's something missing to, I apologize. When I copied this here, there's a part of my chart that is missing, but I will get to it in the motion. Let me pull that up. It was in the agenda item. Let me just pull that up really quick. What's that? Oh, there we go. Thank you. Yeah, so sorry, I cut off when I was copying from the page. I didn't get the second page.
Right.
So again, taking what the difference would be, because again, we don't know if the out of those 5 retirements, if they're going to be, you know, non-certified or certified. So if they're all non-certified, again, we're currently not giving a bonus for that. So actually the cost would be more than if we got the certified, because again, we're going from 5,000 to 7,500. So that's only a $2,500 increase versus the non-certified. We're going from 0 to 4,000. So it's gonna average anywhere based upon 5, anywhere between 15,000 and 21,000 for the bonuses. And then the last one is shift differential. Again, as Sheriff Hess said before in his presentation, that he's got 20 patrol deputies. So again, we're basically doubling the differential pay from 1,100 to 2,200 times 20 patrol deputies. That'd be $22,000 a year. With benefits costs, that would be 26.4. So again, I know the board said at last meeting, could that wait until the budget? But again, I wanted to provide the board with the costs anyway. So Sheriff, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. Any questions?
Any questions from the board? I kind of covered everything last week. Just to reiterate to you, the reason we're coming to you with this is because of the changes that have gone on around the adjacent agencies around us. It does not put us at the top of pay scales around us. It puts us kind of in the middle. But what we actually need, like I told you the meeting before, is if we're so far behind and people are going through looking at where I'm going to put an application, if we don't have some kind of a competition with them, I don't think we're going to get very many. And like we said at the last meeting, you know, we just gotten one application in quite some time, and I actually got one came in today, and they're just not out there. People are not flocking to get into law enforcement. They don't want to work the weekends and holidays and such. So I know it, once again, I seems like I come to you all the time in mid-cycle, but if I don't try to keep up somewhat with our neighbors, and we're going to fall even further behind. We did hire one young man who's local, from a local family. Just like I told you, those are the kind of people we're trying to attract. He started the academy today, and you know, somewhere around next March, he'll be able to get out there and start working in our community. So it's a long process when you hire somebody that walks in the door without a certification. So any questions from y'all?
Any questions, Mr. Chairman?
So the localities around us that have made these changes.
Yes.
Wouldn't they, most of them have made their changes during the budget season where they would have?
I have no idea. All I know is when things get put out there, we talk. Now the other sheriffs around us, you know, we talk about where we're going on things. And like with Louisa being at 56 and then Goochland at 56.2, you know, that was their hopes of accomplishing that. Now I don't when I'm preparing my budget for the next year, I really don't. I mean, I kind of know what they want, but are they always going to get what they want? Right. And then like at the last minute, Almore added a few things to what they're doing, and then everybody went up. Not everybody, but like UVA, you know, jumped into 15,000% of those for certain people. The competition is out there, and even like over toward the Tidewater, their walk-in bonuses at $20,000.
Yeah, so again, we don't necessarily know all the time what other localities or what's going to get approved. You know, about a year and a half ago, the board was made a good decision, and they increased deputies' pays a lot, and then we did the comp study and stuff like that. But, you know, it's funny. We were ahead of a lot of the localities in getting the comp study done, and then they did their comp study. Some of them are just finishing them up right now. So now they're increasing pay, whereas when we did it about a year ago, now we're kind of behind because everyone else did their current comp study and it's going up. So it's
I'm telling you when I go to these meetings with supervisors from around the state, board of directors and stuff. This is the exact same conversation every one of them has. And I mean, it is a problem everywhere because you do something and then if we don't want to just get the ones that get rejected from your job, and that's, I think, what he's trying to fight right now, is us getting the ones that don't get hired at three other places because their bonuses are bigger. Then they come and apply here.
Will you explain again? You're thinking of it not having cost to us in this year. That's what you said, wasn't it? That you thought in the first year this would not have that it wouldn't necessarily affect what comes out of the budget.
You're talking about adding this into the budget?
Yeah.
That's just starting. No, I know that's going to affect the budget, but I think most of that will be covered with vacancy savings.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean,
even with one we hired right now, we still have two, and I got a retirement at the end of August.
Right.
So, you know, and I shouldn't hire someone non-certified again. If an opening comes, it'll be like in November because that's like a lame duck. There's not really many jobs that they can do without being certified for 5 months, and the next academy doesn't start till January. So you get them in here a month and a half or 2 months before the academy so you can get them acclimated a little bit, find out a little bit about their work ethic and things like that before you initially start spending that money on that individual, because it is a long process of training prior to being out on their
own. Yeah, it's a little bit of a balance because, I mean, again, I'm sure the sheriff will have some vacancy from personnel costs, but we don't necessarily know what that is, so we at least put cost to it. Again, the board could potentially say we want to approve these and not provide any additional budget supplement to his budget, but just know if that's the case, we may need to come back to the board at a later point. So in the motions, we have, you know, all these particular things, these proposed changes, and I've got funding sources from them. We didn't necessarily consider not funding it or providing him the budget authority for it, because, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, maybe this gets approved today, and then, you know, before you know it, he's got a bunch of new certified people on staff, and so maybe he is fully staffed, and that does come to fruition a little bit more. So it's a little bit of a balancing act.
Right. So you're saying we could use the vacancy, but if everything's filled, then we're going to have to come up with this.
We are. We're going to have to come up.
You just have to come back to us.
I mean, the bottom line would be at the end of our budget cycle, either preload it in there, and then at the end of the year, that money will be sitting there to go back into the budget. It's very much a gamble as to what we may get dealt and who else may leave. As far as I know, I've just had my one-on-ones with everybody. I only have the one person that can retire that plans on retiring this year. The rest can't, but they're very happy.
Quick question. What is the starting pay for a deputy?
The starting pay right now, certified, is $49.5.
Actually, no, it's $49,120, and then it's $46,800 for non-certified. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'm just comparing it to teachers. I'll do that.
Yep.
And where?
That's what the pay band, the minimum is.
Right.
So for the starting, for someone that's in training, most likely they're going to start off at that bottom end. Someone that's certified isn't necessarily just going to start off at the very bare minimum, because they, yeah.
Depends on their years of service, yeah, that they have, yeah, their experience plays a role in that.
Other than us having to revisit it, if there comes a financial need, is there any reason you all can think of for us to?
That sounds like a deal to me. I mean, I'm here to ask, to let you all know what we need to be competitive, and if you say we get it, you know, at the end, I'm short some money, and it's because we did implemented these things, and if you add money, then
we are approving of this implementation. We are approving what you have brought before us.
You are, and there's funding mechanisms associated with them, but you can just say vacancy savings if you want to, and then if that doesn't pan out, then we'll have to come back to the board.
Do you have a motion plan for that?
Sorry, it's a little small. Like I said, there should be bullets right there between those two. But anyway, again, a move, approve, deny, defer, and it talks about what the change is for pay band 106 from 49,120, and he has to go to 52,500, and then pay band 105 from 46,800 to 49,500. And then the funding source, again, I put potential funding sources, unassigned fund balance or BOS contingency, or the board can just say vacancy savings, and then just know that we'd have to come back if we see that we're going to be short.
So we'll be short. Yeah. You just come back and ask.
Yeah. So you have a motion for each of those.
I have a motion for the increased starting pay. I have a motion for the sign-on bonus, and then I have a motion for the differential.
Okay. Any questions before we?
I would just add, know everybody gets, but once we put it in place, however it's funded in the coming year, once there, it's always there, so it's just going to be an additional cost in the coming years to
whether the board puts money to it now or not, I mean, there's going to be an increase. Yeah. There's going to be an increased cost.
We'll be committing, what is it, 50,000?
I think when I looked at it, let's just say that the board implemented all three of these things. I don't know if the board wants to do that, but again, I think it varies from about 60 to 65, and actually, if you get more certified people with the bonus, because you're going from 5 to 75, it's less of a cost increase. So I think the sheriff would probably be very happy to probably have more certified people on staff too.
Yeah.
There is a cost increase to each one of them.
Okay.
Because even in talking with the surrounding chiefs and sheriffs, everybody's trying to get on the same page on these things, and you will see some things in our next year's budget that we're going to be asking for in advance that's going to help try to attract people. And one example would be that with part-time people, everybody's looking for health insurance. and we get turned down a lot. I got to have health insurance. I can't work without health insurance. So there's some things we're going to be asking for next year to help us be more competitive where other places they can get those things.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have three motions, and so we need someone for the first one. Motion number one.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve increasing the Sheriff's Office deputy starting salary as follows. Pay band 106 for certified deputies from $49,120 to $52,000. Pay band 105 for non-certified deputies from $46,800 to $49,500, with funding to come from the FY24 Sheriff's vacancies, and further authorize a budget supplement.
I think you can just leave it after once you say vacancies. Yeah, just leave it right there.
Okay. Did you finish?
Ms. Eager seconded.
Okay, did you? Ms. Eager. All right, we have a motion number one was made by Mr. O'Brien and seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Now we have motion number two.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve increasing the Sheriff's Office deputy sign-on bonus amounts as follows. Certified deputies from $5,000 to $7,500. Non-certified deputies from $0 to $4,000 with funding to come from the FY24 Sheriff's vacancies.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And motion number three.
Can we spell that?
Can you come up with that?
Yeah, it's at the very. That's the whole thing right there. I'm sorry.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve increasing Sheriff's Office deputies' differential pay from $1,100 to $2,000 per fiscal year with funding coming from the FY24 vacancy, Sheriff's vacancies, and further authorize a budget supplement to.
If you want to say
right.
Vacancy.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. The motion was made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. Okay, now we thank you all. Thank you, sir. D. J.P. Morgan Debt Service CIP Budget Transfers.
So I'm going to try to go through this. This one's a little complicated, and there's lots of cogs in this wheel a little bit here. But anyway, so again, the county closed on debt financing with J.P. Morgan Chase back in February 3rd, 2022 in a little over $5.2 million. Per the financing agreements, there was a spend-down period for the proceeds, which needs to be completed as of August 3rd, 2023. Any unspent funds would then go back to J.P. Morgan. The biggest part of that, as part of the financing, a little over 3.3 was allocated for fire and rescue apparatus. When we closed on the debt proceeds, there was a prepayment on three pieces of the apparatus, and because we did the prepayment, we also had performance bond on, we got a discount on the price for it. So that's one component. So it was expected that we would have the we would have everything prior to August 3rd, 2023, but that is showing that that's not going to occur. Now, with that being said, this just kind of shows all the pieces of apparatus that were the budget, what we have paid to date, and what is currently outstanding. Again, the only way we can requisition funds for vehicles is if we have titles in hands. So we're not going to have titles in hands in some of these vehicles because they're not going to be completed in time. So just right there, that's a little over 700,000 kind of just left on the table if we don't make some changes. There are also a couple other vehicles that we have purchased, and just with some delays in supply chain and things like that, there may or may not be a possibility of some public works and social services vehicles that may not be here prior to August 3rd. Again, whatever we don't receive prior to the August 3rd delivery, you know, the county, we were under contracts with these, the county would have to fund these with unassigned fund balance. And just kind of as a note, the county is currently getting around 5.15% on money that's sitting in the bank versus we're paying 1.37% interest on the proceeds we took out. So we're trying to utilize all these proceeds as best as we can. And so if you remember, even in fiscal year 23 and 24, the board approved some projects, but they approved to pay for them with county general fund proceeds. So really, really what I'm looking to get some direction from the board is, again, we have about a 30-day window to requisition these funds. I think we had about $2.8 million the last time I looked. We already have requisitions that are currently outstanding that we're waiting to get reimbursed on. I think it's for a little over $600,000-$700,000, could even be close to $800,000. Plus, we have a lot of other vehicles that are getting ready to come in. So what I'm really asking, and plus we've earned interest on the money that we've had kind of sitting in there. That's how it works with debt proceeds all the time. Until you spend the money, you earn interest on it. So we've got $82,000 on interest earned on the unspent proceeds too, which can be used towards the vehicles. So my request from the board is fiscal year 23-24, we've got some projects that we have cash funded, allowing myself some latitude to swap some of those funding sources. And I'll give you an example. On this agenda here today, we've got 8 sheriff's vehicles that are ready to go and are on the lot. So if the board, assuming under consent agenda, approves the 8 sheriff's vehicles, we'll get that by this deadline, so we could swap out some of the unfunding of some of the other fire and rescue apparatus with the sheriff's vehicles, where those were going to be cash funded. Another example is we have a Lake Monticello ambulance that I think is probably delivered. If not now, it is. It was just delivered, I think, as of Friday. So Lake Monticello got an ambulance that there was under contract for $331,000. We could potentially look at swapping out some of those funds for that. And then also on the Pleasant Grove Athletic Field, the board approved some additional funding for the lighting project at Pleasant Grove. That was $108,000. So those are just some ideas of big projects that I would likely use, because they're going to be delivered. We're going to have them. And so, again, right there, that's about $731,000 of likely things I would try and flip-flop the proceeds on. And then what we would do if the board move forward with that, then we would bring everything back for whatever we change the funding sources on. Again, what staff is trying to do, we're trying to make sure that we can utilize those low interest proceeds to the best of our ability, and then, you know, making sure we don't have to come out of the general fund for those. So again, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And again, the motion I have just allows some flexibility up to the $900,000 piece, and that was the max, because again, I think looking at some of the fire and rescue apparatus and then some of the other, you know, public works vehicles, social services vehicles, those are the only ones that I see that we may or may not get in by the timeline.
Would it make sense to have you just check in with, say, the chair and the vice chair just for ratification?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely bring it back to the board for formal ratification.
Right,
I can do that. Yeah. And Dan and I talked about the motion here a little bit, and if you want to add something else, like, you know, with the county administrator checking in with the chair or vice chair, we can do that as well.
Yeah, it just
does
covers.
This cover everything you need to utilize the money from JP Morgan?
It should. I mean, again, we've got a lot of things out there. I know Ms. Melton, she's going to be busy this month requisitioning a bunch of different funds, because, again, as soon as we're getting these items in, and not only do we have some stuff coming in, we're working hard to finalize some of this stuff to get it in by the end of the month here, too.
And I want to make sure we're clear on this one. We may be moving this money to other places to go ahead and get it spent by the time the deadline is here.
Correct.
We are not saying we are not getting those other pieces.
Correct. I mean,
sometimes think people get confused, think that even when we move something over here, they're not buying that.
Right.
We're still getting that.
No, like for instance, you know, we had debt proceeds to pay for the full fire truck, and there's an amount that's going to have to be paid. All we're saying is we've requisitioned funds and we're swapping what we were going to pay in from general fund for this apparatus or something, and we're going to be using those general fund dollars to pay the difference on that piece of apparatus that had a balance remaining.
Okay.
So that's.
I thought Mr. Sharon just wanted to make it clear that he was getting the red Lamborghini.
I don't want a Lamborghini. I want something I can work with.
Yeah. Any other questions or concerns? If someone make the motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the County Administrator the flexibility for a funding source transfer of already approved FY22, FY23, and FY24 CIP projects best utilize the full amount of the JPMorgan Chase Bank proceeds issued February 3rd, 2022, with a not-to-exceed amount of $900,000, and further require staff to bring any change in funding sources back to the board for ratification no later than the August 16, 2023 Board of Supervisors meeting.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Fairchild, a second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye.
One quick question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You had a thing up there with a bunch of different vehicles on it.
Yeah, well, let me go back to it real quick.
I don't see car 30 on there.
Because that one, car 30, is in fiscal year 23. That's cash funded.
It's still there.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, like I said, response 5, that's a Lake Monticello vehicle, and we actually may get that in time to be able to utilize that. Car 1, that hasn't even been ordered yet, and these pieces of apparatus, there's just no way we're going to get those 4 pieces in before that timeline. So again, we're trying to utilize and get the things done and requisition that we can. So
good work. Good. All right, so now we will go to the added one to action matters E, ambulance purchase agreement.
Yes, so again, I've got the contract in here, and if the board wants to take a look, so here's the thing. So with our Department of Emergency Services, we thought there was 2 slots with Atlantic Emergency Services to order ambulances. Well, Lake Monticello had the first slot, and then we were trying to pick up the second slot. Well, at one point, Lake Monticello said, "Well, you know, we'll flip flop slots, build slots for you, so you can get the one sooner than we got, because some of our ambulances for the county's department are older with higher mileage." Well, after that all kind of went through, it was determined that the one that Lake Monticello was going to get for the second slot was almost $140,000 more. So at that point, we're like, because of just some timing on when things were signed, at that point, we're like, that's okay, we're going to give you your slot back. Jim True, EMS supervisor, when we were talking with AES, another locality had an ambulance build slot that they were giving up because something happened with them getting it. So to kind of move quickly on this stuff, and again, we really don't want to wait, because right now the Fluvanna ambulances that we have 2 ambulances with at minimum 125,000 miles, and 1 ambulance with 225,000 miles, which is far more than it should be. This is the agreement, a cooperative agreement to purchase an ambulance and get us in the build slot so we can get one sooner than later, because that's going to be a concern, making sure that we get those ambulances to us quicker than we did. And again, waiting another month, we would have probably lost out on that build slot. Atlantic Emergency Solutions, they are waiting, probably after this meeting, Mr. True is going to be notifying them that, assuming the board approves it, yeah, that we locked it in, so.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
And again, Mr. Witten can speak too. Yeah. He's, you know, Ms. Hoffman and Dan have kind of looked at this, and again, Ms. Hoffman did the agreement, and this was similar to an Atlantic Emergency Services agreement, I think, that was on the last meeting for Lake Monticello's ambulance. It's almost identical.
Okay. All right.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a cooperative purchase agreement entitled Ambulance Purchase Agreement Number 2 between Atlantic Emergency Solutions Incorporated and the County of Fluvanna for the purchase of the Fluvanna County Wheeled Coach Number 6224004, $337,076. And further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement after attachment, review, and approval by him of Exhibits 5 and 6, and subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mrs. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
And just for clarity for the board, too, this the board has this amount $351,000 some change budgeted in the fiscal year 23 budget. And normally we wouldn't bring a contract through like this under action. It would be under consent. But because we didn't put it on the agenda, and it wasn't on the agenda in the package, because we literally found out about this Friday, we wanted to just provide some transparency that what the action was. Okay. So that's why it's on here like this, and we're discussing it.
Okay, thank you. And now we'll go to appointments. We have two appointments. I think we have the joint, and we also have the economic development tourist. So we could pull that up. We have one person for the joint board.
Yep, and then there's one at large for EdTac, but there's two applicants.
Yes. So is for the joint board, and then we have Elizabeth Clark and Susie Morris for the Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council, EdTac, at large.
And then again, I don't think we have Ms. What's that? Yeah, the applicant for joint is not on, but Ms. Clark is on Zoom, and Ms. Morris is certainly here.
Okay.
So if you wanted to hear any...
Yes. Yes, we would like to hear any of the individuals who are on the list who would like to join the joint board. We have economic development. Ms. Susie is here. Is Ms. Elizabeth Clark here?
She's on Zoom.
She's
on Zoom.
All right. So let's have Elizabeth Clark first. I see her.
Yep, there she is.
Okay. Ms. Elizabeth, we're here to listen. You'd like to tell us about yourself?
Sure. Thanks for inviting me to the meeting today. I have been a resident of Levanta County. I live on Perkins Road in Kent Store. I've been a resident since 2004. And most of my professional life has been spent in marketing and in advancing through management consulting services, nonprofit organizations, though I've also worked in policy and state government. It's been a long time. I was part of Governor Wilder's administration and did work policy for him during his campaign. And I have also done consulting work for small tourism groups, mostly internationally. I do a lot with direct marketing for nonprofits, including some of the best known in the world, folks like MIT, Yale, and Brown, as well as some organizations and institutions that are much smaller and perhaps have regional reach. I've been felt really fortunate to live in Levanta and to raise my family. It's part of my family raised in Levanta. And it's an area in the county of Virginia that I think is too little known and too little considered. And I would love to be part of advancing Levanta's reputation and supporting activities that help expand its tax base in sustainable ways. Right. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. You all have any questions for Ms. Clark? Thank you.
Strong background.
All right. Ms. Susie Mars?
Do I need to go through Susie Mars?
Yes.
Okay, 6840 Thomas Jefferson Parkway, Palmyra, Virginia, 22963, Quaintly Farm. I think all of you know me. Some of you I have taught. I have taught relatives of some of you. Since I consider myself a people person, and I consider myself very pro-Fluvanna person, a total Fluco, and I spent 54 years in public education here total. I've always tried to do the best by anyone that I've worked with. I think you've seen me at many meetings or I've been online listening. I think I left off that I was on the Rural Preservation Advisory Group of the current 2040 comp plan, which is not complete yet, but I turned mine in back when. I've studied very thoroughly the 2015 comp plan, and it had many good things in it, some things that I think we could look to and consider when we are out trying to get compatible, sustainable businesses in this county. And I know there's some areas of the county that are in desperate need of some more commercial bases and things to serve the needs of the people in those areas. So I would work for these types of businesses that would be sustainable. First, though, we've got to get infrastructure in some of these areas, especially the Fork Union area, I know needs businesses and things that are convenient to the people and citizens there. I think that we must be aware of the total Fluvanna County, not just our particular community planning area. I think that whatever we do now will be reflected in all things Fluvanna eventually. I've been here 80 years, and I laugh at that. Time passes very quickly. Since I am a people person, I consider that I have an obligation to the people of Fluvanna to work the best that I can do for them to get what they need in the areas where they need it. At the same time, trying to ensure that our young people and the next generation and those after that are able to stay here and are able to enjoy the positive qualities of life that some of us have been able to enjoy. Those who decided to stay here and those who have decided to move here. So I welcome and will look for and search diligently for those proper businesses and work to get the infrastructure that's needed in the specific areas that it's needed. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Susie Morris? If not, we will bring it to the board for deliberation.
Well, I'll say that, as Susie has pointed out, I know of nobody who's been more a part of Fluvanna County than Susie has, and to be born here, to have committed so much of her life to servicing everything from Fluvanna's children to all the committees and so on that she's been on, and in her words, to have been here 80 years and still be just as committed. And I've seen things come out of her copy of the comprehensive plan that has so many highlights and so much intellect that she's put into it, and I just think everything points to as great of a resume as Mrs. Clark has. I think Susie's service is still there and needs to be taken advantage of.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Fairchild. Anyone else?
I agree with Mr. Fairchild. I've worked with Susie on committees, and she's very dedicated and wants what's best for all of us.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I would just say that, you know, Susie, of course, nobody can say more than what's already been said. You know, it's a shame in a way that we don't have two positions, because Ms. Clark certainly brings some skill sets that would be very valuable to the Economic Development and Tourist Committee. I'm particularly the idea of how you market Fluvanna is really important, and she's got some great strengths there. And I would certainly say if she's not voted this time, that we would encourage her to apply again next time that comes up.
And the last thing that I'll say is she got me through Spanish, and that was an absolute miracle. I have a hard enough time with English. But Ms. Clark, thank you for applying. I mean, your resume is great, and if you are interested in having your opinion heard, She is very much a people person and would love to talk to you. I guarantee you Ms. Morris will listen to any idea that you have, Ms. Clark.
Well, thank you very much. I know she'll be great.
Thank you, ma'am. Can I go ahead and make a motion?
Yes.
In Spanish.
In Spanish.
No hablo español. Un poquito. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board, commission, and committee appointments. Jump Board. Isella Wittich. Mm-hmm. Term beginning 7/5/2023, ending 6/30/2025. And to EdTech, at-large position, Ms. Susie Morris, probably the only time I've ever called her that, beginning 7/5/2023 and ending 6/30/2025.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan and second by Mrs. Eber. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Okay, next we have our presentation. Dogs running at large ordinance. Mr. Dog.
And this kind of touches off what Ms. Dickerson came up and spoke to the board about. I know the board received emails from her regarding her concerns, and this has been a discussion for many years in Fluvanna County about dogs running at large. And so again, I know it was requested to kind of come back before the board just for discussion. In the board package, we had what Fluvanna County's current ordinance was. Again, there's only an ordinance that really applies to Lake Monticello. And even at the minimum, if the board did nothing, we still have to update that piece of Lake Monticello because it only discusses the Cunningham Magisterial District. Well, we know Lake Monticello reaches more than just the Cunningham District. So at minimum, there's going to need to be a change to that. But we also provided some other sample ordinances of other locales. We included Louisa's, and then we included Mr. Witten also pulled one from Warren County, just for some examples. And again, there's no action, but I guess more of a discussion and where does the board want to go. We certainly have Sheriff Hess here, and we have Virginia Strong, Animal Control Officer for the Sheriff's Office, to certainly speak. And so just got a little, I'll just bring this up really, really quick again. You know, we talked about that there's been a, you know, discussion about trying to find a balance for dogs running at large. And I've got our two ordinances, or our Fluvanna County ordinance again. Here it is. It just says dogs running at large is prohibited within the confines of Lake Monticello subdivision in the Cunningham Magisterial District. And that's the extent of our ordinance, basically. And it talks about what that means. And then from Louisa, again, they said it shall be unlawful. And then what running at large means, it talks about there are some exceptions to the Louisa ordinance for, you know, hunting, as Ms. Morris talked about, for some agricultural farm activities, whether it's, you know, raising, managing, using agricultural animals for food, fiber, transportation. Louisa's, they've got in their ordinance, they've got some written warnings that happen first before they go to more of a fine-based piece, whereas in the Warren County ordinance, it's a little more upfront. But it also does talk about, it has some exceptions for hunting and things like that, you know, if it's a licensed hunter or during field training. But from the Warren County one, it gets more into if your dog's off leash without those exceptions, then there's a fine for that. But like I said, happy to answer any questions. We just provided those two just as a couple examples. Doesn't even mean that's what it looks like, but those were just some variations to what it could be. And I'll certainly give the floor to Sheriff Hess or ACO Strong if she wants to make any comments, and she is in the field every day dealing with it.
Good afternoon.
How are you? Good. So I've been Animal Patrol Officer for 2.5 years, and I came from a county that had a run at large ordinance. When I first came here, and since I've come here, I've been inundated with complaints about not having an ordinance. These are mostly complaints from people who, neighbors or some dogs, chronically run at large and go after their chickens, their cattle, their dogs, their cats. We have people that live in the county that are in fear of going outside. I have one subject on Warrington Lake Road who called me crying because I couldn't do anything, and her children do not feel safe playing in their own yard on their own property. I went and spoke to the neighbors several times and said, please keep the dog at home. I don't want this to turn into a dangerous dog case. This went on until one night we got the call, and those people left to go somewhere and left their dog tethered outside right next to their house on their property. The neighbor's dog came over and almost killed the dog. The only thing that saved the dog is they took it to emergency vet care. So that's what the issue is. It's not really the neighbor's dog got off one time. This is something for chronic when people are having an issue and they're in fear of their lives, their children's lives, their animals' lives. I had two complaints just today. And the one complaint, the guy was upset again. He said, I know you can't do anything, you told me, but I just want to vent. He said, I can't stay at home all day and watch my chickens. He said, I know you went and talked to a neighbor because there for a while, I didn't have a problem. But guess what? The dog was back and now I have a chicken missing. I can't take him to court for depredation because it wasn't witnessed. But in all, he's probably lost 3 or 4 chickens, which to him are his pets, his livelihood. And he said, why can't my own chickens run on my own property and be safe? I really like the law of Louisa because it takes in consideration of the hunters and it takes in consideration of the farmers. I'm a farm girl, so we want to make sure we protect those in rural county and also the hunters. And also it gives them chances. I spoke to Mr. Sheridan a couple months ago, and I don't want to write somebody a ticket because their dog accidentally gets out. Everybody, there's not a single person I can think of whose dog doesn't accidentally get out once in a while. This is more in line for someone who's a chronic problem, and we want to be able to protect the citizens to be able to do what they want to on their own property and not in fear of being attacked. I've taken a lot of dogs to court for dangerous dog and depredation since I've been here, more than I did in Orange. So I just would really like to sit down with county attorney and start working on getting this together and getting this going, a law to protect the citizens, but also protect the rural, to protect citizens who have cattle, who have farms, not only for their working dogs, but for their cattle, so their cattle aren't being mauled to death. And also, you know, the hunters, because the law actually says we have to anyways. We want to protect them from hunting, but have something to prevent these accidents from happening. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions? Sheriff, did you have anything?
No, Deputy Strong pretty much hit it out of the park there. We're not trying to go after everybody's dog who runs away. And there'll be a lot of verbal warnings, and sometimes there'll be some written warnings. But when you repeatedly go back to a place over and over and over again, and they just don't take the measures necessary to secure their dog a little bit more, that's we need to have a little teeth, something to use to hold against people who refuse to comply with other people's boundaries and animals, whether they're domestic animals or livestock. And we've dealt with many cases where they have killed other animals, livestock, cats, and it's traumatic on the owners of those animals to lose them. Even like chickens, I have a few friends that their pets are the chickens. So we're growing. The band is growing. We're getting closer and closer together, and a little bit of something to give us something to use against people who refuse to comply with doing the right thing.
Yes, I agree. We need to improve this ordinance.
Right.
We really do. Because in the past, we've had it, since I've been on the board, it's come before us, and a lot of times people were told that, well, you have to take your neighbor to court. That's the only thing I can suggest to you, and it shouldn't have to be that. We should have something in place. So I'll hear from the other board members about this, how you feel.
I would add that, I talked to Christina about the issue up Nahor Road, and one of the things we talked about, she said, so she grew up in Fluvanna. One of the things she said was, this is something she didn't used to experience growing up here. And I said, I thought the same, and I don't want it to be a county where we start creating more laws or policies that prohibit people from having some of the freedoms that we have. But also reflect on when we put the noise ordinance in place. Like, I want people to be able to go outside and do what they want to do, but this is familiar in the flexibility that we did with the noise ordinance. We're not out trying to bust people for doing, you know, having fun at, you know, midnight, but if it's getting obnoxious to the community, it's reoccurring in the same year. And then I talked to Sheriff Hess, and he told me that it's, one, becoming more and more reoccurring, and as you say, the more we keep on growing, it's just one of the other things. It's a byproduct of it. Now, you know, you go down the road, you're going to pass so many more houses. If you're walking that road, and now the chance of how many dogs you're going to encounter is greater. And with her permission, I'll bring up Jennifer Smek's daughter, who 2 years ago, or not that, not 4 years ago, had one of her fingers bitten off, a big part of the finger, from a dog beside getting on the school bus, right? Or off. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a. I was not as sensitive as I now am to the growing issue that we have, and I'm glad that Christina's made the effort to be sure it came to light with us.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else coming?
And one thing I'd like to clarify, it's a running at large, not a leash law. So what it says is your dog has to be under your control at all times. So like where I live on my family farm. Our dogs stay on the farm. They're trained to stay on the farm. So it's not a leash law where your dog has to be on a leash all the time when it's outside. We've had, when I was in Orange, we had people had their dogs trained, they could run, and their dogs are with them under their control. So they don't have to be on a leash. I just want to make sure people understand it's not a leash law, it's running at large.
Okay, thank you.
And when you talk about hunting, deer hounds, people aren't going to keep up with them, so they may not be with them at that time.
Correct.
But you're usually going to be on the road trying to get in front of them and cut them off.
Correct. And that's something maybe we can talk to the conservation police officer about, how to protect the hunters, but yet still not have hunting dogs aggravating people. We don't really seem to have that here.
No.
They're usually hunting. And to be honest, all the complaints I've had of animals attacking and causing fear of their lives, I haven't had hunting dogs be one of them.
Chickens, maybe.
Maybe going after chickens.
But usually, you're also talking about people when you go up to them and say, oh, my dog didn't do that.
Right.
Or getting belligerent with you.
Right.
And a hunter, they're just going to say, okay, how much do I owe you for your chicken?
Exactly, and usually the hunting dogs are on the run. It's very rare that they stop to pick up a chicken. Usually they're after a deer.
Correct.
So, you know, that's why I like the Louisa law, is it protects hunters. It makes them also kind of keep, the only problem we had in Orange is we'd have people let their dogs out and run and not with them, and they would say, oh, I'm training them or whatever. But after a while I got to know who that was, and we could tell he wasn't hunting, that he was just letting his dogs run. So that's going to be more getting to know them and knowing that they're not actually hunting, they're just letting the dogs run. And again, I really haven't seen that much here. Yeah. Usually they're hunting.
Okay. In the past, we just talked about enforceability for it, and that was something that just came up regularly, was we really don't have the resources to enforce it with any regularity, but you know, that doesn't mean kind of the same alignment of some of the other things that we've come up that. You know, you can't enforce it all the time for problem offenders.
That was one of the things, a deterrent, somewhat of a deterrent. Yeah. Right, I spoke with Chief Allison in Louisa. She's willing to come over and help us do it because she found some problems, and that was one of the problems that she found. Our deputies, you know, we can make it where the deputies, doesn't have to be an air patrol officer, it would be a deputy if they're out at night and they come across it. Right now, they're a little strapped, and I don't want to make a whole lot more work for them, but first year or two would be difficult, but then after that, I think it will calm down. Because I saw it. You know, I lived in Orange, but we didn't have a run at large law. And you could tell the difference. You could see it after a couple of years calm down. And people kept their dogs up, so they didn't want to get a ticket.
So what's the consequence? What consequence did Louisa have?
So Louisa said, habitual offender, 3 or more violations within 2 years result in a $100 fine.
And anything after that?
if they do after that, it looks like there's court summons and and class 4 misdemeanor.
Okay.
And there's also a provision, I was looking at Louise's code, for certain subdivisions, 24 subdivisions, there's actually a fine of up to $150. This is the next code section.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And their ordinance, so this ordinance is for the county as a whole, but then for their 24 subdivisions, it's a little bit, the ordinance is worded a little bit differently, where it's up to $150.
Could it be worded both ways for those zoned agriculture versus those in subdivisions?
And I think that's what Louisa was doing. I think for the county as a whole versus heavily populated subdivisions, they had a little higher fine and they probably get the warning as much either.
Yeah, they probably allowed less warnings or something like that, maybe in more populated areas potentially. But yeah, I mean, if that's something that the board wants, you know, certainly from the county attorney's office and working with the sheriff's office, you know, we could certainly
so
work.
So we agreed to, we're going to start working on it.
Well, that's why we're here, wanting to know what the board's, what the board's.
All right, board, are you in agreement that this is something we need to work
on? We need to look into it. I mean, but like I said, you know, and we need to have flexibility with that.
Yes.
We need to give them the ability to, for habitual offenders to have something.
I mean, again, does Louisa's ordinance that's on the screen, does that seem like something that is, I mean, as a baseline?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, and maybe, you know, Mr. Witten has other things. But.
I don't see anything that red flags me in it at all.
And like I said, Chief Ellison's willing to come over and talk and find what problems they're having with Louisa with
it so that we can improve.
Sure. Another valuable resource could be Officer Krickenberger.
Yes, absolutely.
He only has 30 years of it.
Yes.
And again, with this would be an ordinance change, or be a public hearing, and we'd have to bring it back before the board and all that. So, but again, it really was to kind of bring the topic to light, since it's been kind of a reoccurring thing, and just kind of get some direction from the board.
All right.
And so it sounds like move forward with something. Now, do you want us to bring something back as a draft under unfinished business, just to take a look before we go full on out to do any type of advertisements or anything like that, I would imagine?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
So now we have the 2023 General Assembly update.
So one quick thing here. I just want to get the board's direction here. So it's about 6:30 right now. Normally we've got the 5 to 6:30. We break for closed session at 7. So I know some food's coming. The General Assembly update will take a little bit, and then there's some other items. So we want to break right now and just do a quick half an hour food and closed session, and then come back at 7. Finish things out.
Yeah, and what do y'all think? Is that okay?
Let's do it.
Yes, it's fine.
Well, what? Mr. Witten's got to be here at the end anyway, doesn't he?
He does.
So, yeah. If he got to leave, I'd say let's go ahead.
We didn't say that.
I mean, the only thing I would say is for the public that's here, they might enjoy hearing the assembly update.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, we're just gonna.
We don't have anything after that. Other than just
we can try and break for half an hour. I don't think we're gonna get through all of our closed sessions in a half an hour. But I know there's a couple that we could, and then after the General Assembly update, we may have to go into a second. But I know there's one of them. We kind of need to get going sooner than later.
So in other words, if we did the General Assembly now, we could just stay in closed session until we're done.
There's only a handful of people that are public here, so they want to be here. I'm not saying they do, but
we could. I mean, there's how long
is it our staff member needs to leave at 7?
We have one staff member that needs to be in closed session that's going to need to leave at 7 for another kind of important meeting. But I mean, that's the only. The only hiccup, but I mean, we can do whatever the board wants to do.
Well, how long is it going to take?
General Assembly?
Yeah,
I can do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's a lot of.
We better wait on that.
There's a lot of.
Yeah,
because
it's.
I feel like we should break.
6:29
now.
Yep.
Go ahead, Mr. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, I move the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors enter into closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2-2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, emergency department, emergency services department salaries, prospective industry, prospective business update, legal matters, emergency procurement for vehicles, contract user, grant under the water and sewer ordinance, and temporary signs on county property.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan. We are now in closed session.
Oh, we need to vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
No, then let's say. Chair votes aye.
I'm Chair. I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Flamana County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sherr. And we do a poll, Mr.
Mr. Weaver.
And O'Brien.
Aye.
And Mr. Sheridan. And I, the chair.
Scott, Mr. Weaver.
Next, we have our 2022 General Assembly update. And is that Dave?
Nope, that is.
No,
that
it's, is. No, it's Mr. Whitten.
It's Mr. I see Mr. Whitten, but I see Dave.
He's back up, I believe.
He's back up.
Need backup plans.
Okay. Is officially our attorney, y'all. This is his first.
Do we have a clicker?
Just let me know next slide.
Okay. So basically, what I'll start doing on an annual basis is do a General Assembly update. This is kind of a highlight of the bill. So, like, Virginia Association of Counties, they put out, listing all the bills that passed. And then Thomas Jefferson Plan District, they put out a listing. So what I did is I went through those listings and kind of picked the highlights of the bills that I thought were applicable to the county and that the board members may be interested in learning more. Some of the bills are optional. The majority of the bills are just mandatory. And if there's any places where we need to amend our county code, I'll let the board know. So the first section is optional bills. There's only a few of these. So the first one talks about the locality is authorized to create business improvement districts, and basically where you charge a fee to businesses to fund improvements and business promotions, business recruitment activities. So that's something that Jennifer could look at if it's something you would be interested in doing.
And again, we're going to kind of go through, I mean, there's a good number of them, so we're going to kind of cruise through them. If there's something that the board really kind of peaks up, then we can certainly talk more about.
Yeah, we can come up with a meeting and highlight bills that you have particular interest in and go into more detail on that.
And these slides, all these supplemental slides are always on the county's website page as supplemental presentations. If there's something the board says, oh, I really want to see more about that, or take a look into that.
So as we're looking at updating our comprehensive plan, this is an optional provision that encourages localities to consider strategies to address resilience in their comprehensive plan, which means the capability to anticipate for multi-hazard threats, with minimal damage to social well-being, health, economy. I'm guessing this is probably because of COVID. And it may be mandatory, but for this year, it's optional. FOIA, basically, this was a bill to allow electronic method of payment for FOIA. I believe now, if we charge someone who's paid by check or cash, I don't believe we offer an electronic method at this point. So this is something if we want to use Tyler to allow. But for now, it's just optional. It's not mandatory. So the next section is the mandatory bills for the county. So the first one, this was interesting, especially with all these wedding venues you have in old barns that aren't up to the building code. This basically says if someone goes into these farm buildings that are exempt from the building code, they have to have fire extinguishers, a plan in case of emergency, and a sign posted saying it's exempt. I know I've seen weddings that are in 100-year-old barns, so which are highly flammable. So this was a good bill because you might have people from out of state that just don't realize that it's really not up to code. Stop work orders, basically this says if during the appeal process for a stop work order, the court finds in favor of the party, the party's entitled to actual costs of litigation, including attorney fees. So this would be if someone goes through the appeal process.
Real quick, the one before that about the barns, this basically comes down to if in your active business you're inviting people into your
correct
building.
For like, yeah, for weddings is most common, but you might have like, you know, chamber commerce events or any kind of event, with, you know, reunion. You're inviting people, you're charging people admission. I think it was the intent of the bill. Because a lot of these older farms, I know where I live in Calhoun County, there's a farm next to me, and the barn's probably 100 years old, and they have weddings there. And so I think that was more than, where there's only, you know, one entrance out, you know, which is a ramped grassy area for the tractor. And so, and you know, they'll have weddings there of 100, 200 people. And so this is for the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, basically. For site development, it reduced the acreage from 100 to 50 acres for a site to basically qualify and receive a site development grant. So this is good.
That's good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is good. Which is good for Fumato. Yeah.
School resource grants. This was an incentive grant basically to allow for expenses related to equipment necessary for SROs and other school safety personnel. So this is just good to know that there's this grant authority out there for SROs. So for localities such as us, a greater population of 3,500, they want to start Department of Housing and Community Development. They want to have like a spreadsheet showing the total fee of revenue collected by the locality for all localities across Virginia. So this is something Douglas will have to work on, and it's submitted. This was an interesting bill, basically saying that foreign interests cannot acquire agricultural land. And we have basically the Department of Agricultural compiles a report annually to show land that's under foreign interest. And that has been a big issue, like in Arizona.
I think it was just decided that that was unconstitutional. They couldn't do that. The states couldn't do that.
We'll see if, I mean, I know
Florida, I think.
There's a few states that have done this, and I know there's been court challenges, so it'll be interesting if there's a court challenge. I know in Arizona they were concerned, you know, basically their, you know, Saudi Arabia was buying up land and then growing alfalfa, using water, and shipping it back to Saudi Arabia.
Maybe it was that one, I don't know. But
and
yeah,
so I was reading that there may be court challenge, or there are been court challenges.
Chris Warren just read an article on that, so that was...
So this, we've seen this bill the past few years. This basically extends the sunset provision from 2023 to 2025 for various land use approvals. And this is related to COVID mostly. Same thing with solar. Basically for any solar projects that were approved, it extended the date until 2026. So for our comprehensive plan, basically as part of the transportation plan, we have to include freight corridors when designated transportation facilities. This was a good bill. Basically, when we have, it added walking trails as a recreational use. There's already hiking trails, but you would think walking trails are pretty similar. But all, the good part of the bill is it provided, if someone's providing us an easement for these trails or for canoeing access, then basically they're basically have immunity.
They kind of have the same sovereign immunity as
the localities have. And I think that was one of the reasons, for instance, like the Ride Banner Trail years in Charlottesville, a lot of the property owners didn't want to give up the easement because they were worried about liability. So this is a good bill. We're expanding any trails or access to the river, and we have an access easement. They have the same immunity.
Does the municipality absorb the exposure, or is there not?
No, we have sovereign immunity, recreational immunity, unless it's gross negligence or willful. Basically, for the code official, this makes them the person lawfully in charge of the property when it's declared a derelict building. So basically, they can put up a sign to prohibit anyone from going to the property. So if the building burns down or it's just falling down, sign and have that authority.
So who had the authority before?
I guess it would be, I mean, I think the fire marshal, state fire marshal had that authority. I guess the local official didn't have authority. It'd be up to the property owner himself or herself to do it. But sometimes, you know, it takes a while to clean up a building through the court process. I had one that took 3 years for a burned down building to finally be cleaned up. So this had that hazard to the public for those years. So marijuana, hot topic, basically. Advertising restrictions similar to alcohol, which are good thing. Basically limits what products can be advertised and who can be targeted. This bill had a lot of discussion over THC level and what was industrial hemp and what could be sold. You have so many these food products now that have, you know, THC.
Cookies
and so this was a good bill to kind of regulate how much THC is allowed in these products. So this is a similar bill to the former one about the fees. This one is an annual report we have to give concerning any amendment of local policies, ordinances, and actually it'll be good because it'll be easier to find policies from other localities once this report's put together. So it's a good bill. Right now, you can only have a 5-year agreement to pay delinquent taxes. This will allow agreements to be 6 years, which is a large amount. This could be good.
This basically gives the treasurer the authority to extend payment agreements longer.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, someone has a DMV holder, probably don't want to pay it faster than 6 years. But for like real estate,
yeah,
you know, this is probably more for real estate where you'd have a 6-year agreement. So this was tax exemption for disabled veterans. Basically, they can get a decision before they buy the property. So I guess it's to make sure that, you know, they qualify and property qualifies. It's kind of interesting. I mean, before it's always they buy the property, then they request the designation. So the Commissioner of Revenue will have to respond within 20 business days. But obviously the exemption doesn't go into effect until after they have purchased it. This was a constitutional amendment that, I believe this was the first reading, there needs to be another reading of it before it passes, that expands the current exemption for spouses, so soldiers killed in action, to those that died in the line of duty, with a line of duty determination. So I believe this will be passed again next year before it goes into effect. Procedure for removal of elected officials. Basically, it kind of ties up the procedure, makes it a little clearer what happens, so, and how the petition works, and how the registrar is involved, and the Commonwealth attorney is involved in the process because of issues they've had in the past with handling these petitions. So disposition of unclean bodies, I just had one of these last week, where basically the county pays the cost, and then we go, if there's any money left in the estate, we would go after it to pay the cost. Now it says that the county could also go after the non-probate assets to cover the cost of disposition. So this is where we have to go to court and file a petition in order to dispose of the body. This is the TikTok bill. Can't have TikTok on your phone. I don't think Eric or I have TikTok on our phone, so anyway. We didn't need to wait until June 30th. But basically, this was.
I don't know if I did or
didn't.
So this was any government issued laptop, you know, iPad, you can't have TikTok, which is a good thing.
Yeah, we don't issue any of our county devices with TikTok on them.
I don't think the county has a TikTok account either. No, so
we do not.
So this is when any person, when there's an enforcement action carried out by the locality against a person based on ordinance, and there's a willful disregard for the law, then basically they're entitled to award compensatory damages. So this could end up in, you know, some costs to localities if they have to prove willful disregard. Is this something to be aware of for potential liability to localities? Just be careful when you're enforcing an ordinance that make sure we're doing it properly. This changed the personnel record exemption, a little bit. Basically, just to clarify that it's also people employed by public body engaged in emergency medical services, law enforcement agency. There's more cleanup bill, just to clarify that those records are excluded as well. Posting of a fee policy. So basically, we have to have a policy on our website explaining how the public body assesses charges and noting the current fee, which is based on, you know, the hourly rate of the lowest paid employee that can do the search, current copy cost. And so basically, we'll probably bring this back at your August 2nd agenda for the board to approve this policy. We'll post it on the website, on the FOIA page. This is a long bill, complicated bill, but really important bill. I think it's a 36-page bill. Mm-hmm. So basically, we no longer have to do a descriptive summary when we're advertising for, you know, an ordinance change or rezoning. It basically clarifies that you don't have to have a descriptive summary. You just have to have the tax parcel or the address. And then also it clarified the publication. So now when we defer an item, you have, for like an ordinance, you have to advertise it no more than 14 days in advance, and you have to advertise it twice with 1 week in between. So let's say you have an ordinance, you know, rezoning, and you defer it, and you have to re-advertise it.
Whereas previously,
that's what we had to do, August, move them.
Correct.
Yep.
Move it to
that's
August.
That's why the R4 one got
new.
Was moved.
Okay.
Because timeline with better view, only printing once a week,
right,
it wasn't possible. We would have had to advertise in daily progress or time dispatch.
Right.
So yeah, that's an important bill. It basically changed because before, you know, if you deferred for 6 months, it would just be you didn't have to re-advertise it. For now, because of this bill, you do have to re-advertise it. So it is an additional cost to the county on this deferral. Sexual harassment, basically when you have a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA, you can't have a provision in there basically concealing details of sexual harassment, which makes sense because it's against public policy. So it's one of those things you would think anyone would know, but I guess there was an issue, and so they had to make it all
deferred.
Yeah. This was interesting, that organ donors basically, they have 60 days of unpaid leave. And so this is something we might have to add to our personnel policy, this new provision. I've talked to Donna about it. Or if you're a bone marrow donor, you get 30 business days of unpaid leave. So kind of an interesting bill.
Unpaid leave.
So it's not a cost, it's not an
I guess unless you have paid leave.
Well, unless you have paid leave.
Yeah, yeah, unless you have leave accrual built
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you can use your leave.
Yeah.
This was a good bill. Basically, if we're installing playground equipment, we can use cooperative procurement, and you know, the company can actually install it for us and put it together. It's not considered construction. So that was a good bill. Electric vehicle fires. You see the videos on YouTube of them. Basically, this. It's the new training program. It has to be available by 2024. That all firefighters are required to engage in the training program. They have until 2025 to complete it. So I thought that was interesting as we're seeing more of these electric vehicles on the road. So for civil cases, when there's expunged criminal records, it says if there's an action against the locality or law enforcement officer, basically, they can still file a motion to get those records when they've been expunged, or if there's a petition to expunge those records, then they can be released. Local curfew, this enables chief law enforcement officer to enact a curfew. There's a civil disturbance. I don't think we'd have an issue with Havana County, but it's still, we do have the authority for some reason. There was an issue. Have a curfew, and it's for no more than 24 hours, unless the board supervisors make sense of it. You know, we're seeing more of these workers' compensation bills. Basically, this is another one for anxiety disorder, depressive disorder for law enforcement officers. So pretty much every year we've seen more of these bills. We're basically more compensable. Illnesses are covered under workers' comp. Just make clear that these are covered as well.
Is that only for police officers?
Law enforcement and firefighters.
Okay.
There's a lot of bills this year about TDOs, transport. So this is the one. It's where someone's awaiting a transport to facilitate the physician. Can basically conduct an evaluation and release the person if they determine the person no longer needs the TDO. So, you know, we're having a backlog of, you know, overload people paying for transport to Western State, Eastern States. It's another avenue to help alleviate that. Magistrates can now authorize alternative transportation of the person. So you know, sheriff's deputies don't have to wait there while the person's waiting for the TDO transport. So this is a bill that allows employees or contractors to have, transport the individual. Unattended vehicles. It allows for the removal of vehicles by the Civil Code Enforcement Division under Douglas's office. And so this is good, but basically they can authorize removal. It doesn't have to be the sheriff's office. It just gives another tool we have an operative. Or not just on unattended vehicles, not just an operative vehicles on the side of the highway.
That doesn't apply to, say, nuisance. Doesn't apply to people that have them in their yard, and they're, I mean, it has to be in a right of way, or I mean, it has to be on a road.
See, we currently have a policy in our ordinance that you can't have more than five inoperable vehicles on your property.
Mm-hmm. So that would be zoning, all right, yeah. The zoning office would handle that. It would normally take that to court for inoperable vehicles. I think this is more for on the side of highways, mm-hmm. and right of ways. Basically, county staff. So I'll look more at that bill and see if we need to actually adopt anything to have that authority, adopt an ordinance, or and maybe we need to amend our code specifically to have that authority. Uninsured motorist fee. I always thought this was strange that you can just pay $500 and not have insurance. But basically this is a repeal effective April 2024. That basically the commissioner or the DMV will still register these vehicles, but after that, you have to, my understanding is you have to have insurance. Maybe David Blount's here, you might be able to speak to that also. My understanding of that was that you would have to have insurance after that point, or you wouldn't be able to register your vehicle.
You don't think you just check a box? Do you have insurance coverage?
That's what I'm not sure. I'd have to read more into the bill and see.
No registration.
Yeah, but they
can look it up. You know, that was my assumption as well. I thought my assumption have to, yeah. I mean, I know the vehicle hit my car and totaled it. I wasn't there. You know, luckily, he stayed because his car was totaled too. But his car had been totaled as he was uninsured, you know. I would have been on the hook objects obstructing driver's view, basically making it clear dashboard cameras are allowed. So a lot of people have dashboard cameras. You just have to make sure that they're attached in a certain way, concealed behind the rear view mirror, so it doesn't obstruct your view. So we kind of went through that quickly. Any of the bills, if you want me to highlight them in a later board and discuss them further. A few of the bills, we'll have to, I'll look at whether we need to update our code if you know someone, right? And then one FOIA file, so we'll bring that. Are there any bills you want to discuss now? Any questions about?
And if you have any questions,
but that was a great review. Yeah.
If you have any questions, the slide set will be on the individual meeting board page as supplemental presentations. If you ever want to go back and take a look and say, I want to know more about X. So,
And Dave, since you're here, do you want to add any observations you have?
Maybe just two things I should add. David Blunt, Thomas Jefferson Plan District Commission. The damage in several of the reporting bills to DHCD, permit fees, we make change in zoning ordinances or properties or what have you. DHCD has not figured out exactly yet what that's going to look like. There was supposed to be some money in the budget, but we still haven't been to the budget, to give us some additional resources to them to create the, you know, the mechanisms for that reporting. So that's kind of a to be determined, but I think they've got a timeline in place where they're going to try to, you know, do one here in the fall, maybe another one in the spring. Probably be hearing more about that one in the future. The farm buildings one is interesting as well. That issue's been around for a number of years, and there's been a number of studies at the state level to look at that, and it's been very difficult, I think, for folks who are on all sides of that issue to come to some agreement as to, you know, what in a preventative way can be done for these older barns and other places where you get 100, 150, 200 people. And hopefully it doesn't make any tragedy happen to spur the approval of state law. I think your summary noted that there was an ongoing study of that as well. So there's a technical advisory committee that DHCD is working with, and they're going to, you know, take another whack at it this year, and there may be some additional recommendations that come forward for legislation next year.
I know you had mentioned previously that you thought there would be some legislation with regard to short-term rentals. I guess that did not happen, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Short-term rentals, the two main bills, one in the House and one in the Senate, really dealt with properties that were managed by a property management company, licensed realtor, what have you. Those got sent to a work group of the Virginia Housing Commission for review. I think that work group that's looking at that has met once. I wouldn't be surprised to see legislation next year that's really something that comes forward from the industry again, as opposed to, you know, whatever the Housing Commission, you know, comes up with. They may have legislation as well. But yeah, still discussion, so no changes to the law, you know, that took effect from what your current authority is.
Thank you.
Any word about what kind of amendments are going to make to the school budgets?
I don't know if we're going to get amendments or not, you know, in July or August. I can tell you that if there are no amendments made to the current biennial budget, then the governor's introduced budget that we'll see in December will have a whole lot more state general funds to play with in terms of how they, you know, are recommended for appropriation or additional, you know, tax relief or what have you. I know that's putting the schools in a tight position, but I just, you know, I don't have that crystal ball, unfortunately.
Do you get the impression that if something's not done by July, they're going to not approve anything?
There's a real crystal ball out there. Yeah, it's really tough to speculate on what's going on.
I'm not trying to tell you about it, tell you our bad spot.
No, I understand. It's a tough position for everybody.
Most of those guys have never sat on this thing.
That's true, yeah. And you know, next session's going to be challenging just because this year of turnover and the seniority that's going to be lost. You know, a lot of new folks, particularly in your money committees and the Senate Finance Committee, where you're going to have more than half the members being new. So it's going to be a lot of learning that needs to be done. So you all will have two new legislators representing Louisiana County. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you to reach out to them. I'm going to be doing the same thing with the legislators across the region. But reach out to them, you know, invite them to one of your meetings, get to know them, start developing a relationship with them, because I think there's going to be a lot of educating that needs to be done. So fortunately, I think, you know, in the case of, you know, former Senator Garrett, who has the House seat representing Louisiana, he was in the General Assembly for two terms, so we'll have a good sense of how things work and a good knowledge, I think, of what goes on at the local level. Always like to seize upon opportunities to inform and educate folks.
Okay.
Anything
else?
And
thank you.
Had a really good conversation with Dan the other day. Look forward to working with him on some legislative things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you do.
All right, now we have the consent agenda. Minutes of June 21, 2023. Purchase agreement with Basic Auto Sales for 2022, Chevrolet Silverado 1500. J, Magic City Vehicle Purchase Agreement. K, Fiscal Year 23 ARPA Grant State Library. L, Cooperative Agreement under City of Charlottesville, Virginia Contract Number 46000176 for Police Uniforms and Howard Uniform Company, LLC. M, County Attorney Paralegal, Legal Assistant Job Description. N, Emergency Medical Services, EMS Policies. Anyone like to pull any of those for further discussion? If not, can we have a motion to receive?
So moved.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion, Mr. Bryant, and a second, by Mr. Sheridan, to adopt the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Okay. And then we go to new business.
Yeah, well, right. Unfinished business first, and I want to say something.
Unfinished business.
Is this where a motion is?
No, it'd be under new business.
The new business is for the motion. Yeah. All right, so now we are at unfinished business.
Yes, I haven't looked. Did you? You said you were going to post the spreadsheets from the Science Crossroads water sewer.
Yeah, all the slides and stuff are on the page.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the, if you go into the Board of Supervisors page and you click on a meeting,
agendas and minutes.
Yeah, agendas and minutes. All kind of a little bit towards the bottom, not all at the bottom. There's a thing called supplemental presentations.
Okay.
And it has all the. During these meetings, any presentations, that's where they all get compiled. They get PDF, so they're all there for every meeting.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Now we have a motion, new business from and Mr. Sheridan will do the motion.
I hope
I think I got it.
I hope you can read some of the chicken's right.
Okay, Mr. Sheridan.
All right. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve an amendment to Section 2.8.3A of the personnel policy to authorize the county administrator to place a new employee at 20% above the minimum of the range of the grade. I also move that the pay band for an EMT BLS position be raised from 12 to 14, and the pay band for an EMT ALS position be raised from pay band 17 to pay band 19.
Second.
All right. The motion read by Mr. Sheridan and second by Mr. O'Brien. Oh, all in favor?
Well, I think for the public worth just mentioning that it's very challenging to find EMT people these days. I mean, I think that's
Working hard to make sure the county is covered.
Well, y'all go ahead.
Yes. I think we just said
it. You said it. And people online and people in the audience know why we made this motion and where we're at now.
Was that a temporary authority?
For 90 days, I believe.
90 days.
I'm sorry, I forgot to put that on there.
Okay, so we're in.
Yeah, you forgot to put that on.
Just, I'd like to amend it to say for 90 days.
Okay. The motion has been amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes. Yes. Now we have our second public comments. Anyone would like to speak to the board, come to the podium and give your name and address and tell us what you would like to talk to us about. Anyone? Anyone online? If not, then I will close the second comment section.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move the Rappahannock County Board of Supervisors enter to a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A5 and Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing prospective industry, prospective business update, and legal matters, emergency procurement for vehicles, contract user grant under the Water and Sewer Authority Ordinance, and temporary signs on county property.
All right, do we have a second? All right, motion by Mr. Bryant, second by Mrs. Eager to go into closed session. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned until the Nevada County Board of Supervisors can meet again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
And we have a second.
Second.
Motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan. Ms. Fairchild.
Aye.
Ms.
Aye.
Mr. Stewart, I want to hear your aye.
Aye.
Okay, aye. Chair, aye. And
Jeremy? C. Motion to adjourn.
Second. Nobody second. Okay. Jeremy from Sheridan, second vote. All in favor?
Aye.
You're adjourned.